Tommy Nelson continues his study on the Song of Solomon. This session is titled The Art of Romance, Part 1. It's important to understand the context of this message, so at this time we suggest you stop the cassette and take a few moments to read Chapter 7, verses 1, 2, and 11.
Well, once again, I'm delighted to be here. What I'd like you to do is to find the Song of Solomon once again in your Bible, and we'll be looking at Chapter 7. Through about chapter 8 and verse 4. And we have looked at the art of attraction and dating and courting, the art of intimacy at a honeymoon. We have looked at the art of conflict, and we're going to look tonight at the art of romance. That's why I wore pink. All right, get a little February flavor, a little Valentine's flavor. But you know, of all of the messages to a group of singles that I could give, if you gave me one shot out of all of the Song of Solomon that could most prepare you for marriage, I would give chapter 7 on the art of the deepening of a couple. Do you remember back in the 70s, you had a song and it was called Jackson, and the refrain went like this: "We got married in a fever, hotter than a pepper sprout. And we've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out." And that, a lot of times, is the way we typically look at marriage. That we had a honeymoon that was just this side of immoral, of just passionate, just incendiary, and now we live in the light of what used to be, as our marriage has gone lukewarm and tepid. And so often when you go to a restaurant and you see, as we have said before, a couple that is gentle and tender and listening and affectionate, and he pulls out the chair, your first thought is, this is not a couple that has perfected romance. You're thinking, they're newlyweds. And someday they will learn to be obnoxious like the rest of us. And that is not what God intended. One guy put it like this. He said, the first year of marriage, a guy takes his wife out. He pulls out the chair. He says, sit down here, sweetie. Let me put my coat over you. We don't want my darling to get a sniffle. Third year, honey, cover your mouth when you cough. Would you? Fifth year of marriage, how can we eat with you barking like a seal? Would you do something about that? And that's the way that marriage tends to go. And you've seen these couples. There is no communication, no caring, no affection, no sensitivity, no intimacy, no spontaneity. And unless one of them starts hacking there in the restaurant, there's not going to be really any exchange down there. And this is why they come to you and they say, don't get married. Married couples will say this. This is why they come to me 20 years into marriage and they end up divorcing. Because they end up going into lukewarmness, then they build their marriage on the kids graduate, they look across the table and say, who are you? This is why you get couples that with the kids, as Josh McDowell said, that 90% of kids in high school cannot imagine their parents having sex. How many of you cannot, I want you to be honest, we won't put the film on you here. I know what you're thinking. How many of you cannot imagine your parents having sex? All right, a bunch of you. And that's sad. Because quite often that's the way marriage goes. Now the point is, there's a right way to attract, and there's a right way to date, there's a right way to court, there's a right way to have sex, and there's a right way to conflict. Do you think there's a right way to deepen your marriage? Are you meant to get married as Ward and June Cleaver and then evolve to Homer and Marge? I mean, is that God's plan for you? There are four horsemen of the apocalypse in the book of Revelation. In the same way, there are four horsemen to marriage that you have to deal with. First of all, you have to deal with sin, where the illusion fades of who you married. And then you deal with the horseman of age, where the beauty fades of who you married. And then last of all, you deal with the horseman of forgetfulness, where you no longer remember, you take for granted the faithfulness of your mate. But the third big one that you have to deal with, right before that last one, is the horseman of laziness. And this is why this message is so important. Because early on in marriage and in dating, your tenderness, your romance, your sexuality is an instinct, it's intuitive, it's responsive. But after the sweet is chewed out, you get down to commitment. You get down to a resolution, to a discipline, that I will love that person. And this is why it is so dangerous to get married on immorality. Because as Josh McDowell says, the problem with immorality is you think you got more than you got. And if you don't have the discipline to say, yes, Lord, I will love, honor, and cherish. Yes, Lord, I will love, honor, submit, obey, and respect this man. If there is not the resolution, the higher voice speaking to you, your marriage will go tepid. The dating, courtship, sex, a lot of that can take care of itself by intuition. I could give no more important message to a group as yourself than this one right here. And that's the art of romance. I want you to just look at something in this text. A lot of couples can go tepid, but you won't notice these guys doing it. If you'll notice down in verse 11, come, my beloved, let us go into the country. Let's spend the night in the villages. Let's arise early and go to the vineyards to see whether the vine has budded, the blossoms have opened, the pomegranates have bloomed. Ladies, what season are we in? Once again, it's springtime. We got married in springtime and courted in springtime. This couple is back in springtime. Marriages do not have to devolve. That's a worldly idea. It's not biblical. Now, I want you to notice something else as I start to take you through this text. Fellas, I'm not intending to lean on you any more than the text. But in verse 1 down through verse 9a, it's the male we're talking about. The man is the initiator. In verse 9b through 8:4, it's the woman who's the responder. Fellas, the man is the leader of romance. The man is the initiator. Now, a lot of you guys, I want to ask you the question, can you see yourself saying to your wife, I love you? Kneeling before your wife, taking her by the hand and saying, sweetheart, I love you now as I loved you then and more. Do you see yourself doing that? Do you have a little bit of Shakespeare in you? Now you might be saying, no, Alta. I'm from Waxahachie. Friend, if you ain't got it, you best find it. Because I will assure you, you may not think you are Romeo, but you are Mary and Juliet. I'll promise you. And there's not a woman on earth that does not love to be treated with tenderness, with romance, with consideration, with courtesy, with etiquette, with delicateness by her husband. I don't care if she wrestles at the sportatorium. That woman wants to be treated tenderly. And if you ain't tender and romantic, women have ways of negotiation. Trust me. So the man leads. And fellas, remember, the artists, the sculptors, the chefs, the architects, the painters, the designers, the great amount of them are men. And it's not just because we had more opportunity. You are made to be romantic. God is a romantic deity. He does not just have a legal relationship to bring us to heaven. He loves us with an everlasting love. He is a romantic deity. And you have it within your breast to be romantic. What it comes down to is resolve. Say another thing to you, fellas. As I've said before, and I want to say it again, your problem is that you will tend to be romantic in order to bag and to mount your wife like an elk on the wall. You'll send her flowers that will bankrupt Holland to get her, and then she won't get a flower for 20 years unless it's Valentine's and anniversaries where you back the truck up and dump chocolates and stuff all over to be efficient. That's really an irritating thing, and a woman feels prostituted. You have to learn the art of how to be romantic to your wife. I got a couple in our church. I got to tell you this. Denton has a lot of outlying communities, all right? And this dear brother, he was talking to his wife, and he said to my wife, I said, just what do you need? And she said, I'll be honest to you. I would like for you to pick me up. And he said, well, let me. And she said, no, that ain't what I mean. She said, I mean for you to pick me up just like in the days when we were at the dance hall. He thought he was going to, you know, load her on the truck. You know. And they went down to a country western dance place, and he said, we sat there and just made eyes. And he said that tickled her to no end. Now, that's a smart guy right there. I don't care if he is a welder. This guy knew that you got to romance your wife. You've got to be sensitive. You've got to be delicate. So, fellas, if you don't have it in you, you best find it. Because you're called to be passionate and deep and sweet and tender to your wife. Verse 1. I'm going to show you 10 things this fella does. Fellas, I've been married for 21 years almost, and I don't want to be dogmatic on this text, but everybody that disagrees is wrong. Verse 1. How beautiful are your feet in sandals. We're in the bedroom again. On the honeymoon night, he started with her hair and went to her eyes and her nose and her lips. He went right down her body. Now we're starting with her feet and we're going up her body. And he's examining his wife. And he says to this part of her that is not the most glamorous part of a woman, and I think most would agree, her feet. Your feet are beautiful. Point one, this fellow has deepened in his knowledge of his wife. Did you get that, fellas? You've got to be an authority on that woman. You've got to study her. And the way that you are an authority on the feet of your wife, the little nuances of her, is that you spend time with her. Guys, make a note. Once you get married, you date. You still take her out. You have a night. My night is Wednesday night. I shut down everything. Unless if something comes up, I get her consent and I take her out. And I take her to the place of her choice. I take her to eat. And when I take her to eat, I just don't look out the window while she cuts her liver. You understand? I look at her and I pat her hand and I'm a good listener and I spend that time and I just don't say, well, let's take a break and go out. Bathe. All the brothers are writing it. Bathe. Floss, if you must. And you just spend time talking to that woman. You need to learn your wife. I got a brother in the Lord that works with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and if you've been in the FCA, their basic unit is called the Huddle Group. And it's a small group of kids that gets together for Bible study and prayer. He was on FCA staff, and he was shagging out the door one night. And he said to his wife, she said, where are you going? We've been waiting for you all day. He said, well, I got to go to Huddle Group. And she called to him some words that as he left the door, he said, they froze me in my boots. He said, I got in the car and I drove through tears all the way to that high school. I said, what did she say to you? She said, what about our huddle group? Meaning, what about me? And you'll find sometimes that you can share a bedroom, a bathroom, a den, and a kitchen and be alienated from your mate. Because when you were dating, you set aside from 7:30 till midnight and you talked to no one else. You looked at her, you looked at him, and you spent that time. And couples wonder why something's gone sour in their relationship. It's because they spend no time with each other. They say, man, we don't get away from each other. Not really. And when you have kids, it gets complicated. This man spends time with his wife. Number one, you deepen in your knowledge of your mate. Secondly, how beautiful are your feet in sandals, O prince's daughter. Make a note, fellas. His exaltation deepens of his wife. In the book, he has started off calling her his dove, his unique one, his perfect one, his darling. He's called her his mare, his lily, and his rose. Now do you see what he calls her into marriage? Royalty. She is the prince's daughter. Proverbs. Her children praise her, and her husband praises her in the gate, saying, "Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all." I want you to know, guys, my wife turned, 45, just the other day. She won't get this video, I've made sure. But my wife turned 45, and it still gets to me. And I called her over. I was sitting in a recliner. I said, "Come here, sweetie." And I set her down on my lap. And I put my arms around her. And I looked at this woman now that I have been together with for 21 years, almost half my life. I have a vague memory of what life was like without her. And I set her in my lap and I put my arms around her. And I just went deep. And I said, "I want you to know, you have never embarrassed me. You have seldom ever hurt me. You're a pride to me. You're a pride to my sons. You're a precious daughter." And as happens all the time, I wept. I stopped. I cried. And she just put her arms around me. And she says, "Are you a crybaby?" I said, "Yes, I am." It's interesting, fellas, and I'll tell you what. I have a Valentine's banquet at our church every year. And at the end of it, I make the men kneel, take their wives by the hand, and do something that is precious. I'll make them recite their vows. I'll make them lean forward in the ear of their wife and say something to her that nobody else will hear about how wonderful that she is. You know what happens? The women get kind of tickled. The men weep. Because they find out it's marvelous to go down deep. Your exaltation has to heighten. And fellas, if you want to bless her soul, you brag on her in front of your children, and you brag on her in public as to how marvelous that she is. Thirdly, how beautiful are your feet in sandals, knowledge. O prince's daughter, exaltation. The curve of your hips are like jewels. His praise goes up. This is an intimate thing that only his wife would know. And he says, on something that I know that no one else knows, you are more than fine gold and silver. You're like precious jewels, a good wife. Who can find? He praises her to her face. Marvelous thing. It's amazing whenever you go to these marital conferences. Do you know what singles you end up doing? You pay to do at a marital conference. They will make you sit down and write on a piece of paper the best things about your mate and the deepest things that you want them to know. And at that conference, you have to sit in a chair, knee to knee, and look at them. And you read. They don't let couples talk because a lot of times couples become incoherent because of anger in their marriages. And they make them read and tell them and break up log jams of communication that they haven't had sometimes for 25, 30 years. And they make that man say things that the woman has dreamed and fantasized about on how precious that she is. The guy that's the senior pastor at Denton Bible, Mel Summerall, he's 71 years old, went to one of these. He said, "My marriage was in one of these places." He said, "I was a good provider. I was a good worker. I fought hard for my wife." But he said, "Basically, I was a butler married to a maid. And the sweetness was gone." He said, "This conference made me tell her how wonderful she was." He said, "I ran out of paper. I got next to her." He said, "I ain't finished reading it to her yet." He said, "What I did run out of was Kleenex." He said, "I cried and I cried." And he said, "I had to sit there and let her tell me all that was in her heart that I had just run by her and wouldn't let her talk." And he said, "I wept until I could weep no more." This man's praise heightens of his wife. Verse 2. Now, fellas, I need to explain this to you. This will get you in trouble. Your navel is like a round goblet. Your belly's like a canister, sweetheart. It worked with Tom. No, your navel's like a round goblet that never lacks mixed wine. Your belly is like a heap of wheat fenced about with lilies. You know what goes up here? His appreciation. Wine and wheat, spring crop, fall crop of Israel. that gets the early and the late rains. God said to the nation Israel, you're a nation that doesn't need an overflowing Nile like Egypt. I'll give you rain in its season. God said, you don't have to take your foot and dig a furrow for irrigation. I'll give you the early and the late rains. And he does. And that's when you brought in at Pentecost and at Tabernacles the great harvest of grapes and of bread. He says, when he looks at this woman's, the heart in the Hebrew of the emotions, the belly, and he says, you are as the fall crop and as the spring crop. You never lacked mixed wine, and your belly is like a heap of wheat. The chaff is removed. It is there for the bounty of the land. What he is saying is, you, my darling, are the blessing of God. Ladies, do you think you could feel something for this man? He might be ugly as a mud duck, but you could still feel something for this man because he admires, praises, takes time for you, and he elevates you as far as his appreciation. Proverbs. Listen to this, fellas. Give her the product of her hands. Let her works praise her in the gate. That is a phrase in the Old Testament for paying your worker. Give him the product of his hands. Proverbs 31, give her the product of her hands. How do you like on Friday not being paid? How does a wife like going through labor, bearing children, taking care of a home, a husband, pouring out her life for children? And they never rise up to say, you are the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me. I was at a camp one time and I heard this kid smart off at his mother. I grabbed him by the throat. I said, listen. I pulled his shirt up. I said, you know what that is? That's a belly button. You know how you got it? Because you had an umbilical cord attached to your mother, and she gave you everything you are, and she breathed for you and ate for you, and then she took your little body and forced it out into the world over about 18 hours of labor, and that was no picnic. Every time I said, you look at your navel, you think of where your life came from. It was attached to a woman. And your life literally is her life. Fellas, this is how you get an affair going. Let me show you how to have an affair. This is to warn you, not to train you, all right? They all start with the letter E because there's an ease to having an affair. I've watched couples have them now for 20 years. You start with the elimination of tenderness and respect. You have an emotional vacuum in the home. You go from elimination to an encounter. You meet someone. You go from an encounter to enjoyment because that person gives you the hormone that your mate gave you, promised you, and cut you off from. You go from enjoyment to expression. I'm sorry, to expedition. And that's where you expedite the relationship and make sure you end up in that person's presence. And you enjoy it from a distance. You have Fantasy Island. And then there comes a time that you build a bridge to Fantasy Island. And that's the E of expression. And you, in some way, communicate to that person how you feel. And it will be done very delicately at first. I've compared it to playing tennis. You kind of volley in their court. I so enjoy spending time with you. And then you see what they do. They may say, well, I enjoy spending time with you. And you go, boop, really? Boop, really? And you go back and forth until finally you have enough confidence to say, I think I'm feeling something. And you flinch. And if they say, I feel something too, now you're just one step away from experience. That's how you have an affair. I got ready to teach this. I got to tell you, and some of the guys up in Denton said, you're teaching what tonight? I said, I'm teaching on the art of romance. And a bunch of them all said to me, before you see it, you need to go see a movie. Guess what movie they told me to go see? The Bridges of Madison County. It's not a Christian movie, It's ambivalent about adultery. You never end up finding if Meryl Streep, to her, felt like she made the right or wrong choice. But I tell you what, I went and saw that today. Every married man needs to go watch that movie. You know why? Because it doesn't give an ugly caricature of an affair. Clint Eastwood is not some lustful Lothario. Meryl Streep is not some voluptuous, passionate woman. She is modest. Clint is shy. Her husband is not some blackguard that treats her like dirt. He's a nice guy. He's a hard worker. But he doesn't talk to her. He doesn't touch her. He doesn't praise her. He doesn't provide her what she needs. And she meets Clint. And he never means to do anything. He laughs at her jokes. He picks her flowers. He cleans up after he eats. He washes the onions for a meal. He offers her a cold drink. He treats her with courtesy. And you watch in Meryl Streep this awful battle going on between right and her soul that is so crying out, not for sex, not for anything, but just to be treated with tenderness and love. And I kid you not, I left that movie and I sat down with my wife outside of Ace Hardware. And I took her hand and I said, "Sugar, do you ever feel deprived of what I vowed to you in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit?" We had a good talk. Like I say, you know, I don't want Prestonwood to get a bunch of letters about recommending some R-rated movie. Doesn't bother me. Can't fire me. Address them to Doug. Doug Hudson. H-U-D-S-O-N.